My name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland.
Maybe I should rename this podcast and turn it into Walking and Talking. It's just a thought. Yeah, I know I was supposed to have the other rig up and running, but that certainly wasn't the case. But I'm in a different spot this time around, this week. I am in a place where there are 90,000 people around me. Kind of quiet for that, isn't it? Yeah, I'm at Elmwood Cemetery. Very historic place here in Memphis. Now, those of you that listen in from outside of the area, if you ever come into Memphis, this is a great little tourist spot. And you can come see a lot of history. There's a lot of relatively famous people that are buried here. Civil War generals. A lot of members of the Civil War that died during the war, they're buried here. Some really beautiful bits of statuary and headstones and just a remarkable spot. In fact, I'm standing in front of a grave of Elizabeth H. Harrison, wife of T.G. Harrison, died 1898. He's buried here. It's currently open and they're still accepting residents. There's quite a few different fellas there, groups of people that are buried here. Like I said, go way back into the Civil War. Hell, there's a bunch of Freemasons buried in here. They're trying to take over this too, aren't they? Sorry, inside joke. Any rate, there are really some remarkable things here, and I'm here because, well, it's convenient. And I thought it'd make for a nice little subject on a nice July day that we're experiencing right now. And what brings me here actually is my second return. My wife and I and a friend named Jim Wallace gave us a little tour of the place, and having lived here for all these years, and I've been here a couple of times and never thought much of it, but we got kind of a really neat tour of the place. And there are some victims here of the yellow fever, the big yellow fever thing that happened in the I guess it was the late 1800s here in the Memphis area. A lot of folks that were victims of that are buried here. There were those who had helped those that were sick that are buried here, who wound up ultimately getting the yellow fever. And I'm not here on really any morbid or out of morbid curiosity. That would be just kind of wrong. But it is part of the history here, and it's a relatively quiet type of thing. Now, keep in mind, as I record this, there's a few folks milling about. And, man, this place is hilly. And I know there's a phenomena that occurs called EVP, Electronic Voice Phenomena. The idea is that, you know, hey, there's a car coming. Hell, hold on. The idea behind it, ghost hunters use this technique. It's where apparently you record where ghosts might be hanging about, and they imprint their voices on the recording device. You don't hear them while you're there recording, so it'll be interesting when I play this back if there's any at all on here. I've never captured it, never really thought much of it. Not a thing to be too terribly worked up about. But yes, and this place is beautiful, by the way. It's so beautifully landscaped and well-maintained, and a lot of people here that work here. It's kind of cool because if you do work here, they give you a plot so you can be a part of the history down here. So, at any rate, the 90,000 people that are here. The Memphis first, in fact, because I'm walking by his mausoleum now, Memphis first black millionaire is interred here with his family. That would be Robert Church. Those familiar with Memphis might know Church Park here in the city. That's his. And there's a church there, a literal church. I wonder if it's the Robert Church Church. Anyway, he's interred here along with his family. George W. Lee is here. There was a very well-known street that was by that name. There is actually a very, very large Asian contingency that's buried here. All right, now I'm wandering around and I'm looking for a very particular spot, but I'll find it at some point. And I'll explain when I get there. But at any rate, I'll tell you about some other stuff that's here anyway. Yes, so there's also like a little area here, which is absolutely fascinating, of the people who have donated their bodies to science. They have a little area that is immemorial for themselves, and they're well kind of looked after, and there's a monument there that explains what it is. And apparently in here, although I didn't see it when Jim and Josephine and I were here, but apparently there is a headstone, a footstone, if you will, or a, you know, the kind that just lay on the ground, and it just says "in memory of," but there's no name on it. And the story was, if I can remember it right, is that there was a hospital that was being built, and at one point there had been a cemetery there. And they removed all the bodies out of it, of course, before they built the hospital. And while they were digging about, they had come across what looked to be like a large toolbox. And when they opened it up, there was a perfectly preserved 7-year-old boy in there, well-dressed, but unidentified and unaccounted for. Nobody knew who he was or anything like that, so they moved him here, which is kind of a fitting thing. It's kind of cool. But he's around here somewhere. But as I'm walking, yeah, they have, oh, by the way, they have an audio tour that you can take, kind of a self-guided thing. All right, I think I'm getting closer to where I'm supposed to be. By the way, there's train tracks near here, so that's probably what you're hearing. Unless there's a lot of people just... a lot of dead folks yapping. Nope. I thought I was in the right spot, but I'm not. I'll get to it eventually, trust me. Because I have... The reason behind this particular episode of the show... Yeah, that's real. The reason behind this particular episode is a story I want to impart onto you... that I hope you will find entertaining, if not somewhat amusing, which is really sort of the point behind this. And it relates to a really, really cool thing. So I'll get to it when I find it. So as a matter of fact, I'm going to cut this off for a second, and when I get there, I'll get it back on and I'll tell you the story. So here we go. Okay, I'm found where I'm at. Like I said, this place is absolutely enormous. Beautiful, beautiful place. Some wonderful marble work here. Stuff that is very old and, of course, very current. You know, there's still folks that are being buried here. But I'm fine. Oh, here we go. See, there's a landmark here to make things easy. I mean, this thing, it's like its own city. It's that big. And the landmark that they use here is out of all I don't know the acreage here, but it's pretty substantial. There's only one garbage can here, and that's fitting because that's my landmark to find where I'm at. Okay. All right, so there's the garbage can. Ah, here we go. Found it. Okay. I am standing-ish at the headstone of Thomas D. Byrd, B-Y-R-D, born 1854, died 1926. He's also buried with his son, Hubert, born 1910 and died 1929. Unremarkable as that might be, let me tell you a little bit of the story behind Mr. Thomas David Byrd. You see, Thomas was a carpenter, died at the age of 72, which all checks out. He was working on a house in Midtown, not far from where we live, And he was up on a ladder when he fell and hit his head. He was taken home. I guess in 1926, it wasn't like there were really a lot of hospitals around. But in 1926, they carried him home several blocks from there where he died. And left behind his wife, Josephine, which coincidentally is the same name as my wife. The reason why I'm standing here and why I'm telling you this story is that Thomas Bird still walks around in my house. Yeah, our place is relatively haunted. We've had a lot of guests that have come in and they had seen an older guy walking about with a head wound. And I became curious about it, and I looked up in our property records that there was a death record in there, but I couldn't get a hold of the death record. Well, our friend Jim Wallace, who had originally taken us here for the tour, had done some digging for me and located the name of this fellow who had passed. It's the only person who died in the house, and it all sort of checked out. And so we're under the assumption that Thomas and his ghost are hanging about in our place because that's where he died. Well, it's been freaking Jo out quite a bit. You know, she's had to, you know, endure some very, I don't know, odd noises, if you will. I've seen something out of the corner of my eye. Our staff photographer, Avril Conway, she saw somebody roaming about in the radio station when nobody was there. She was waiting for somebody to come unlock the door for her. And she said she thought it was me roaming around in there, but I hadn't even gotten home yet, and there was nobody else there. So, yeah, several people have reported seeing him, and he's actually a nice guy. We don't have any problem with him being around. He's actually relatively pleasant. He doesn't cause any trouble. But yeah, and through our investigation, it led us to here to his headstone. And of course, like any other cemetery, they keep a record of who's who and where they are. So Jim met Joe and I here the other day and got a map, and we found him. One of the 90,000 people that are buried here, and here we are standing at the headstone. Up on the blog page, you'll see a picture of the headstone. It's nothing really terribly remarkable. But so there's the story. Brief as that might be, there are times when my wife will often, you know, like if I'm at a show somewhere and I'm not home, she'll think I'm home because she hears somebody walking around in the house. And she'll get the sense that somebody's looking at her while she's sleeping. I don't really get all of that. I think he's a little more shy of me being around, but, you know, that could very well be. But since I refer to her as Josephine, maybe he's somewhat confused and thinks that his wife is still here. Incidentally, Thomas and Josephine, when they were married, had three children. Of course, one of them here buried. I think it's three children. I don't have all my notes with me. Hubert here, he didn't. This is the weird thing. He died in 1929, but I can't find any death records on him because apparently he didn't die here in Shelby County. Now, he probably died in somewhere a surrounding county, and then they, I guess Josephine had him moved here. But anyway, Josephine was some 26 years younger than Thomas. She went on to remarry, and her second husband are buried in Memorial Park out in East Memphis, along with their other two children. One of them, of course, had gotten married, but she had died in 1966. I'd love to see a picture of Thomas. I've got a pretty accurate description of him, but I'd like to see the picture just to verify if that's actually him. Of course, this is all brought about people with speculation about bringing somebody in to remove Thomas, send him on his way. But as I said, he's not necessarily causing any problems. I would hate to think, and whether you believe in ghost stories or not, and I don't want this to be all about the paranormal, because, well, first of all, it's a fascinating subject, and I am deeply fascinated by it. And there is a great podcast on the subject about Memphis and its haunted history. Look for 901 Paranormal. Do a search for that. The number is 901 Paranormal. And it's a wonderful podcast about Memphis and its past and its stuff like that. So I do highly recommend that. But, you know, having said all of that, you've got Of course, our home was built in 1910, and he did the addition. We do know that because he was a carpenter, for God's sake. And he did it in the around 1920, about 6 years before he died. And that is that. Oddly enough, when we were doing some work on the place, I was up under the crawl space of the house. Oddly enough, right underneath the radio station itself in that room, and found what they call an ass pocket of whiskey, a half pint. No, it was a pint. Yeah, it's a pint bottle. No, it's a half pint. And it's sitting in my bar at home. It's, of course, empty. And it was it's a brown bottle, has a ship on it. It's a beautiful bottle. It's an old bottle. And I'm fairly certain that Thomas enjoyed a little whiskey or rum. But at any rate, folks have wanted to come and say, well, you should get that out of your house. You don't need him to be there. That might cause problems. I'm not necessarily buying that because he isn't malevolent by any means. He does roam around. Now, what I mean by roaming around is I think he roams the neighborhood. He does something because there for a long time it's very quiet, and then there are other times when he's around, and you just get that sense that he's around. But it's like I said, it's nothing really bad. And now I'm being able to attach a name to this. It makes things a little easier to deal with. Oh, incidentally, I've been dying to do this. He's buried relatively close to a guy by name of Lewis Schmuck. He died in 1873. I don't know. I'm sure the word schmuck had been around at least since then. Poor bastard. Any rate, so now we know about Thomas. And Diana, who's a very spiritual person there at the radio station, promotions director, you've heard her on one of these podcasts before. She believes that we should just leave him be. He might be there watching out for everything, making sure everybody's going to be okay. And there ain't nothing wrong with that. So I think we're going to allow him to stay. But now that I know where he's buried, there you have it. And what's really kind of sad about this is I don't know that there's any of his family alive. There's got to be somebody. But it's not like I can go knock on their door if I ever find them and say, hey, listen, have you got a picture of your great-grandfather or whoever relation you might be to him? Because, you know, he's kind of hanging around the house, and we'd kind of like to see him go. Or not. I'm okay with him there. Like I said, he doesn't seem to cause any problems. So, onward. Now, I got to kind of make my way back to where I parked because I came out here late in the afternoon. This place closes. It's open every day, okay? At 8:30, but they closed the gates at 4:30. And as much as I'm cool with this place, I don't know that I really want to be locked in here. That would be a bit creepy, possibly. Don't know. But it does make you think, pardon, when you come to places like this, it makes you think of your own mortality. It's something that we all have to deal with. It was, it's often been said, no one here gets out alive. But to actually say it in a cemetery takes on a whole different meaning. But yeah, you got to make do with the best that you got for the limited time that you have. And that's the important thing. Because we're all going to wind up in a spot like this. And we hope that we don't get forgotten. We really hope that. Like Mr. Bird over here. As you can see on the blog page, his headstone is not terribly remarkable. They probably didn't have a whole lot of money at the time. So it's a simple headstone. But he and his son are all that was left, and of the only relation that's buried here. You pass on, and then your family or whoever's left, your survivors, they move on to other places and continue on with their lives. Which I guess is the whole reason behind having a headstone in the first place. Because, you know, yeah, this is where they're buried. But if, you know, I'm looking at a grave right here of Martha a daughter of Thomas and Sophia H. Lowry, born in 1838, died buried here 1852. Fairly certain if you dug down there, you wouldn't find her. The, you know, time has taken care of all of that, but there is a marker that shows people, wandering visitors, strangers, of the fact that that human existed. And sometimes they have bits of history on them. You know, the headstones. Stuff that you would, you know, that they felt the family members, survivors thought would be interesting, that would come across their headstone someday deep into the future, and they would learn about somebody. As Jim pointed out, Jim Wallace, who gave us the original tour, he said, you know, the thing about it is this, quite simply. Of the 90,000 people that are buried here, you have to remember that every single last one of them have a story. And it might be a rather beautiful story. It might be a very sad story. There's a lot of babies buried here too, by the way. You got to remember, back in those days, you know, 1 in 10 kids survived. And you think about it. Here's a child here. Mary Eleanor, daughter of J.B. and Mary Nolan. December 25th, 1918, died February 26th, 1919. A couple of months old. The impact that that person would have had on society had they lived. Grown up, eventually gotten married, had kids. One of them could have wound up being the President of the United States, or a mass murderer, or a war hero, or a guy who got a job working in an insurance company all the way to his gold watch. But no, her little life was cut short by whatever circumstance, and here she lies with no other survivors to call that we know of. Like I said, I don't want to be morbid about it, and I'm certainly not trying to be a downer. You know, death is one of those things, like I said, we all have to face. And as I walk around here and look at some of these names, there's some war dead in here, not just, you know, from the Civil War, but from all the wars, from the First World War to World War II, Korea, Vietnam. They have chosen to have their last remains taken here, possibly for family or other such things. What is sort of amusing to me is that there is a series of very old stones, and they're kind of tall, right? They're about, I don't know, 5 feet, 6 feet tall maybe, and they're very narrow, flat, you know, and has their name on there. Son of so-and-so, lived to the age of 70 or whatever, their family history on it. And they'll have on there engraved, and these are beautifully done stones, they have on there engraved, and they're, of course, aged heavily because of how old they are. It's a hand with the finger, like you're given the number one sign, the index finger, and it's pointing straight up. As in, when you stand in there, I suppose you should look up if you want to see where they are. You hope they didn't want to put it where it's pointed the other way. That wouldn't be cool at all. Oh, yeah. So, yes, I do recommend anybody who is in the Memphis area, if you've never done it, it is worth coming here and taking a stroll. This place is so beautiful that a lot of people come here and have picnics here. And it's sort of inviting in that aspect. And it's a very, you know, very cool environment here. They do a thing here in around Halloween, which is kind of cool. You can bring the kids out. And they have local actors dress in period clothing. And they they'll step out kind of from behind the stones as the groups come walking by. And it's that relatively famous person, quote unquote, back from the dead, to tell you about their lives and why they're here. And I first heard about it because a friend of mine was one of the actors, and I've been meaning to bring my wife out here because I know she would really enjoy that. It would be quite fun. And it's like, you know, you, a couple of hours out here and you walking along on a nice, crisp fall evening. And there's, you know, something kind of fun about being, I guess, in a cemetery and around Halloween time. But no, I'm out here in July. It's hot. It's a bit humid. And we heard the story of Mr. Thomas David Byrd. As I make my way back through the cemetery here at Elmwood, I noticed I still have plenty of time to kind of talk for a second. I'm in a part of the cemetery I've yet to have seen. And I've just come across the memorial and I guess the grave site. It's kind of a raised marble platform. Absolutely stunning. I don't think you can get anybody these days to make you something like this. Anyway, it's Herman Frank Arnold and Victoria Luciani Arnold. Her headstone says here, November 26, 1840. She died November 2nd of 1928, daughter of Pascal Luciani, officer of Napoleon I, cousin of Letizia Romolini, mother of Napoleon I, granddaughter of Major David Wentling, officer of General George Washington. Next to her is Herman Frank Arnold, born October 6, 1837, died April 10, 1927. And all it has on the headstone is sheet music, and underneath it, it says the original score of Dixie. I'm thinking that that's the guy who wrote the song Dixie, and he's buried here, and I just stepped off of his grave. Right across the little road here is this caught my eye. Nice, lovely headstone. It says Lieutenant Frank M. Harris, United States Navy, born 1887, died October 1915. His last words, help the others first. Yeah, isn't that nice? You want your last words written on your headstone? Give that a thought. That noise you hear, of course, is a train as I've come across another end of the park here. I've just been walking through here. And I came across this under this nice little maple tree here. I think it's maple. I don't know what it is. It's a tree. Underneath it is a headstone that reads, Kate McCormick, seduced and pregnant by her father's friend, unwed, she died from abortion, her only choice, abandoned in life and death by family with but a single rose from her mother. Buried only through the kindness of an unknown benefactor, died February 1875, age 21. Victim of an unforgiving society, have mercy on us. You see all kinds of things when you come out here to a cemetery like that. And that's a relatively new headstone. That one's been replaced. So somebody obviously has taken pity on her, and thus they should, and have adopted him. You know, that brings up a pretty interesting idea, that if you're looking to be somewhat benevolent, you can come to your neighborhood cemetery, one of maybe historic relevance, find a grave that has, I guess through time, been forgotten. Somebody you might have found their story somewhat interesting, something about their name perhaps. Even if it's a relative or not, if you don't have any relatives that you know of, if you come from a small family, find that stone, find that grave, research it a bit, because thanks to the internet, you can research all sorts of stuff. Learn a little something about them. Kind of polish up the old headstone, if you will. I know that sounds like a dirty euphemism, and I probably shouldn't make that joke out here in a cemetery, but, you know, polishing the headstone does ring. It does ring kind of filthy. My apologies to those of the 90,000 around me that don't seem to be laughing at that joke. Also here at Elmwood Cemetery, there's a sign here that is that it reads in part, Elmwood is also distinguished as a garden cemetery. The visitor center, known as the Cottage, dated to 1866. It's a rare local example of Victorian carpenter Gothic architecture. It's listed in the National Register in 1978. The cemetery listed in 2002. This is also the inhabitant of one Isham G. Harris, courtesy of the Library of Congress, a picture there regarding the Civil War. And several members, or victims, I should say, of the Sultana disaster. Yeah, the Sultana, interesting story about that. The steamboat was overloaded with a bunch of soldiers, Union soldiers. They had been released from Confederate prisons. The boat, way overloaded, exploded and sank in the Mississippi River, just actually kind of north of the city proper. It's about 8 miles north there. Happened April 27th, 1865. It killed 1,700 people. Here in Elmwood, they've erected a marker in their memory in 1989, which I'm standing right here in front of, amongst many others of the Confederate dead. Ultimately, at first, Elmwood Cemetery was the final resting place of Union soldiers for the longest time, but now there is an area here that is dedicated to the southern side, if you will, where the Confederate soldiers resting. It says here nearly 1,000 Confederate soldiers and veterans are buried here. See here, June 27th, 1861, there was an article in our local paper that stated this plot was dedicated to the Southern Mothers Society. A second article dated 25th of September, 1861 states, this company, at the commencement of the war, very liberally donated and set apart a lot of ground for the purpose of burying, free of charge, all soldiers who may die honorably in defense of our liberties. In the center of the lot is a circle of 12 feet in diameter for the erection of a monument, which our patriotic citizens will no doubt raise to the memory of the brave soldiers who have fallen in defense of our country. So there you go. All sorts of history here, but it goes back to that thing I was telling you about, you know, finding a person or a story of interest and looking after their grave. You know, now that I think of that, and we've heard the story of Mr. Thomas Byrd, who is hanging around my house, perhaps we'll start by bringing some flowers and laying at his stone. Don't know anything about the man. He could have been a right bastard for all we know. Or he could have been a very decent human being. We don't know. But my research will continue on. I tell you what, though, I have seen this as I'm moving along here. A lot of these older stones, like this one from 1891, I think is what that was. It's so weathered, I can't read it. But there's an engraving on it, and I've seen a bunch of these, and it's two hands shaking, you know, like two right hands shaking, like friendly. Not quite sure what to make of that.
Here's what's coming up on the next edition from Radioland.
She's over here fondling herself.
Hey, we have an audience today.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. Need some help with that?
She's giving herself a mammogram back there. What's she doing?
She dropped some Pop-Tart crumbs down in that gigantic cleavage of hers.
Luckiest Pop-Tart crumbs in the whole wide world.
Yeah, well, she'll be digging them out later when she's in the shower. They always wait to see what the porn industry is going to do before they pull the trigger on any of it.
You think that's still true? Because from what I understand, that's an industry that's really taking it on the chin the last...
So to
Six
speak.
Years. Yeah. Oh, God.
They're making their own dirty movies, and they're sticking it out there, so to speak.
Hey, so you're penalizing me for not doing business with you.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. That's like me saying, if you don't eat at my restaurant, I'm going to throw food at you every time you walk by.
Right. Exactly.
And what would yours read? I'm just curious.
Go fuck yourself.
Radio Memphis is an internet broadcasting service provided by PirateRadioStudios.com, Memphis, Tennessee, USA.
So that's that. There it is. That's where we're going to leave it. I've got to get on out of here before they lock me in here. Don't know that I really would want to do that, although apparently there has been a story or two of somebody who had wound up camping out in here. I don't know that I'd have too much of a problem with that. If there was somebody with me. All right, call me a little scaredy cat about it. But, you know, after all, there's a lot of dead people around. You don't know what goes on in here after hours. They might show up. Estes did. You know, it'll be fun to go back and listen to this as I produce this and see if there's any EVP, electronic voice phenomena. It might happen, it might not. I don't know. We'll see. If it does, I'll shine a light on it. So, at any rate, there you go. For those of you, once again, that are in the Memphis area, I highly recommend a trip to Elmwood Park. It's open every day, 7 days a week, 8:30 to 4:30. They're going to close the gates here before long, and they'll kick you out of here. And there's a guided tour that has, it's an audio tour where you can walk the thing. Put on your walking shoes and bring plenty of water, because it's a hike, my friend, and it's a good, healthy day, especially this time of year. Now, of course, this place is just as beautiful in the wintertime and in the fall, too, with the color changes with the leaves. Right now, here in July, is a bunch of trees that are in bloom and purple and white flowers that are out there. Absolutely tremendous and a beautiful place. I highly recommend it. It's Elmwood Cemetery. Look them up online, and you can learn more. So that's that for this this edition of the podcast. Once again, I thank all of you for being longtime supporters and subscribers. Nearly 27,000 of you have subscribed to this thing, and I appreciate that. It means a lot to me. It would also mean a lot to me if you took a moment in the upper right-hand corner of my blogspot page, rickcheddar.blogspot.com, you will see a link that says Patreon, or Patreon, however you want to say it. Click on it, take a look at the video there, and see how you can get involved in that. Yeah, I know there's ads on this page. There are no ads in this podcast, and I want to keep it that way for now. But if it comes to a point where somebody offers me a bit of money to do it, I'm going to take it. I've always believed that on-demand programming should remain free, but there are costs associated with putting on a show like this. So if you would, find a way to kick in a couple of bucks to the old show here, and I'd be greatly appreciative of it. Isn't this weird? I'm out here in a cemetery asking you to give me money. Sorry, excuse me. I'm passing through someone's plot here, trying to get back to my car. So, anyway, give it a look. Give it a think. I appreciate your time. And as always, we'll see you next time. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.